94.5 The Zone. This is the Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Live from Poncho and Lefty's in Sylvan Park. Orders have been placed. Doors have been opened. 11 a.m. is here, and that means lunchtime is here. Come hang with us on your lunch break. Sylvan Park location right across the street from Edley's Barbecue. Online, edleysbbq.com. They deliver. If you don't want to get out right now, you want delivery, they'll deliver for you. Great delivery options through their menu. Poncho and Lefty's also delivers. Ponchoandlefties.com for more information. A jam-packed second half of the show coming up. John Feinstein will join us with national headlines. We have Austin Price with the VolQuest report. Austin is with Jeremy Pruitt's press conference right now. We'll get the very latest from Austin coming up at 11:45. Eddie George at noon, and we will also listen in live to the Mike Vrabel presser. That is at 12:30 today. Titans win, Vols lose. Your reaction at 615-737-1045, our number. You guys want to go rapid fire here?
Let's do it.
Let's go to Dylan, who's driving.
Hey, guys. How's it going, man?
Great. What's up?
Sorry if you can't really hear my voice. I lost in the first quarter. But two quick things that I noticed from the stands I wanted to shout out. One, I hope that Taylor Lewan's doing okay, because my buddy and I did see it looks like his knee shifted when he grabbed at it. So I'm really hoping he's okay, but thoughts go out to him. But my main reason for the call was to kind of give Mike Vrabel a little bit of a props, because I'm pretty damn sure that he did the 13-man on the field. I'm pretty sure that was on purpose. He did
a
little acting, and you could see that he told Jonathan Joseph to stay on the field. So I'm going to just hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, he was. And Mike Herndon at Broadway Sports Media had a great piece on it and kind of went frame by frame and even showed the television broadcast where you can see Jonathan Joseph confused on the field. And Vrabel, they cut back to Vrabel. He says, it's fine. Okay. It's okay.
We got this.
Yeah, he knows exactly what he's doing to stay out there. So, though, that was definitely a smart move by Vrabel.
But it saves them at least 40 seconds.
Yes.
It's a very Patriots move of him also, right? Knowing the rule book to that level. And being able to execute and knowing in the moment.
It's a very Jeff Fisher move of him, honestly.
Jeff Fisher, too.
That's what I thought of, Paul, is the way that Fisher knows the rule book and knows the loopholes within it.
Yes.
That's what Vrabel has done now. And he's this isn't the first time we've seen something like this from him.
No, he did it against the Jets.
And the other thing I've
forced the punt.
I've also thought this. I wonder what else he's done that no one's picked up on.
Yes.
That we haven't asked him about, that he continues to keep in his back pocket for, like, did we ask about this when he did this against the Jets in 2018?
I wrote a piece about it, but it was like a day or two later.
So yeah, so now we're seeing Warren Sharp and everyone else pick up on it. I wonder what else he's got in his back pocket.
It's true,
like,
and there's stuff he's probably done that's slipped through.
Yeah. 615-737-1045.
And to people who would say, like, well, they'll change the rule or whatever, you know what Vrabel will say?
Okay.
Tell me what the rules are, and I'll play
by them. Adjust.
Right.
737-1045 if you want to jump in. Jeremy Pruitt speaking to the media right now. This is a crazy stat. He said in his opening remarks, in the last six quarters, we've turned the ball over seven times. There's no way you can beat anybody doing that. In the last six quarters, we've given up 30 points while the defense has given up two first downs.
Wow.
How are
Let
they
that
doing
sink
that?
In. Well, that's what happens when you have
impressive.
Two pick sixes. Another fumble return for a touchdown. Those are 30 points where the defense allowed two first downs. They gave up 6 points after two
like
turnovers
yesterday.
With where they went minus 2 yards.
What was the meeting like yesterday between him and Chaney?
Not pleasant. I don't think anything around there is going to be pleasant this week for anyone. And it shouldn't be. That's a program that should be prouder than being okay with getting your doors blown off by Kentucky at home. There should be no one that feels comfortable about that. If they're comfortable with that, then Jeremy Pruitt's got even bigger problems than a loss to Kentucky.
Austin Price coming up in about 30 minutes. I want to get to this because with the way the show lays out now, we may not have a chance to mention it. But the role players stepping up, we're going to talk with everyone, and rightfully so. We're talking about Tannehill and Henry and their performance. The national perspective will certainly be focused on that. But the way the Titans won that game was they found a way with clock management down the stretch, which we've mentioned here over the last couple of minutes. Adam Humphries, I can't think of a catch he's made where he doesn't know where he is on the field.
Unbelievable.
I mean, he's always at the stick.
Right thinking there. Of and always right at the stick. Thinking of two, and the other one, the touchdown,
and
he's uncovered.
Right.
And Tannehill it just finds him.
A.J. Brown, who made a wonderful grab adjusting to get the football and then holding on to get the second foot down upon review, which was thoroughly looked at. I mean, we mentioned at the start of the show, good thing they called it what they did on the field, because I don't know if you could reverse it either way.
No. And I'm pretty sure the official who's standing right there looks to the official who's over. And then the camera cut away. What did you see there?
With the
official who's right on top of it looked to the official who was down the line on the other side of the pylon.
Yeah.
And then the camera cut away. Did that official nod or give a touchdown
signal?
That
official confirmed it, yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
He nodded?
Yeah, he confirms it with him.
And then they signal touchdown.
He now had his third career two-touchdown game. He has three touchdowns now in his last two. And he has the most touchdowns, which is 11 touchdowns, by a player in their first 20 games with this franchise. I mean, that's the impact he's making.
It's amazing how suited he is to the Tennessee tough brand.
Oh, and also, he said post-game, he told Tannehill, throw me the football.
Yeah.
Now, like, Tannehill said, he's demanding the ball.
Tannehill said, he said it earlier in the drive. Tannehill made it sound like it wasn't in the huddle for that play. It was earlier in the drive where he made it clear, like, hey, I got to be part of this.
And Anthony Firkser, 8 catches, but an even bigger block on the game-winning run, and it all equaled a huge win against the divisional opponent. But let's go just a layer further on what Firkser did, because a lot of the production, especially late in the game, came without Jonnu Smith on the field. And just speaking of the role players and how they're finding a way, the best receiving days for the Titans this season, Khalif Raymond and Anthony Firkser.
Not who how saw you that? Draw it up. Yeah. And Corey Davis has had a good year. Right?
Yes.
Corey Davis has had a good year.
Khalif Raymond in Minnesota had 118 yards receiving, and Firkser had 113 yesterday. And by yards, let's put this in perspective. By yards, Titans tight end. There's only 3 names ahead of him for best receiving days as a tight end. Jared Cook had 169 yards in 2011. Delanie Walker has the next top 3 from 2014 and 2016, and Ben Troop had 116 yards receiving in 2005. Then there's Firkser.
Frank Wycheck isn't even.
Then
on
there's
it.
Firkser.
Frank Wycheck isn't even on it.
That's outstanding.
That's remarkable.
That's the impact.
Here's the thing too that's going to not look as good as it should at the end of the season, right? Brown and Davis's season. Maybe Davis only misses one game here, right? Or two.
Davis missed 2. He's missed the last 2 games with COVID.
So Davis is going to be 14 games at best. Brown's going to be 13 games at best, right? Did he miss 3?
Brown,
he missed he played the opener.
He played Denver and then came back against Buffalo.
So he missed 3.
Yeah.
So he's going to be 13 games at best. So their season stats, you know, pushing for 1,000 and all, for Brown anyway, and Davis in a contract year and all that, their season stats are going to be not 16 games worth of stats. So they're going to be contextualized season stats that are going to demand, you say, but they missed 2 games, but they missed 3 games. They're not going to have the neat and tidy 16-game package of stats, which is unfortunate when it comes to looking at body of work, right? And which, with league fans, aren't going to, understand that. They're going to look at league leaders and see where they fit in.
No,
and
you're right.
They're not going to fit in neatly into that.
Let's go to Calvin next on the phones. Hey, Calvin.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Jonathan. I love y'all guys' insight. Just sitting here on my lunch break and thinking about some of the great plays, man. And I think it's going to get kind of forgotten about just because of Henry's performance and, you know, everybody else's performance. But, I mean, I could be wrong, but it looked like Tannehill had our offense and the defense thinking that he was going to clock that ball before he threw it to AJ, and then he goes into shotgun. I don't know if that's just something they practice or what, but to me it seemed like he was trying to throw everybody off and pull like a Dan Marino type move. But hope you all have a great day. Appreciate the time. Thank you.
They indicated.
I thought he ran up the line like he was going to spike it, but then immediately aborted that decision and decided to go into a play.
But they indicated that they want that it's by design. They want Houston to think they're going to spike it there and that they've got it worked out, that they can get two plays for one play there in a way that a lot of people think. So what was it, 4 seconds when he caught it? So they would have had another play there, could have had another play there without the spike. So mathematically, they've got that figured out as to how to best play.
Back to the phones, and I apologize if this is either RJ or BJ in Phoenix.
I thought it was Yaman.
RJ?
Hey, how you doing, guys? RJ.
RJ, what's up, man?
Good guess.
So, I'm trying to find something positive to take. And sorry if it's hard to hear, I'm on the forklift. I'm trying
You're good.
To find something positive to take. Give me one positive from the ball lost. I'm on top of Rocky Top, and I'm ready to dive off
the end
first.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Chad, you're positive.
Mr. Positivity. Positive, Chad.
The second thing is listening to the post-game press conference with Vrabel on my 104.5 The Zone app. I'm about 99% sure he said that in his mind he had four downs to work with, so that's why he ran Henry on the King Cat. And my last thing, and I'm going to get off, for the Titans fans that want national recognition or whatnot, Antonio Gonzalez yesterday said that Tannehill was in the MVP race. He was backed up by all the guys on the panel. So everybody shut up about the national media. We planned another undefeated team Sunday. If we go out and win, they will have no choice but to talk about us, give us love and respect. It's time to put up or shut up. If you can leave me on hold so I can listen, I'd appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
You got it, RJ. No problem, man.
I'll give you two positives from Tennessee.
Wow. Kentucky.
First half defense, and if you hate Jarrett Garantano, he's done. Saturday. I mean, look, the writing's on the wall at this point. There's not any more talk about he's the quarterback. You got Jeremy Pruitt saying after the game, I would say it's undecided. Speaking of Jeremy Pruitt meeting with the media right now, he said two guys took snaps in their scrimmage last night, Harrison Bailey and Brian Maurer. He said Garantano is still a possibility. They will decide about 30 minutes before kickoff, and that's when people will find out who's going to start at quarterback. Asked about, or not asked about, he said that he made a change as defensive line coach, said Jimmy Brumbaugh worked his tail off, just not a good fit. Said, I will now coach the defensive line the rest of the way. Was Jeremy Pruitt's solution.
He alone can do it.
Which means that Jeremy Pruitt is now the highest-paid defensive line coach in the history of SEC football.
Let's work in one more before we get to John Feinstein. Dave is calling from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was calling to talk a little bit about the trade deadline. And with the Texans losing yesterday, mathematically, odds-wise, I guess, their chance of making the playoffs is pretty diminished. And there was talk about them possibly unloading because they don't have their draft picks are dismal as far as in the upcoming years. Any chance that they would trade within the division and let us pick up, I don't know if we could get a guy like Watt or not, but just overall, do you think Robinson's going to make any moves before trade deadline? If I could stay on hold as well, that would be great. Thanks.
The trade deadline has been busier in recent years, Paul.
It has. I wouldn't think it, I mean, Watt is a banged up,
well,
generally no. banged
if
up.
I'm thinking of O-line now, right. The tackle, but yeah. You're not trading for a left tackle
no.
right now.
I mean, you'd be trading for a sixth tackle type who could play, who could
right.
start for you. You'd be trading for a guy like Kelly.
I'm also probably. Thinking defensive back, too, with the way the third down defense has been.
Yeah, but with Adoree coming back, I think you're thinking, look, they got to be pretty damn happy with their roster right now.
I agree.
Because
they haven't played their best ball, and they're winning and putting up big numbers doing it. Like, going back to our find-a-way chat there, I mean, the third down defense and, you know, up until yesterday, the run game had been really good, but not postseason-level dominant. And we saw that yesterday.
And look, what's the biggest position that's a problem? Pass rush. And they added Clowney and
but they have talent
Beasley,
there. That's
right?
the thing.
They need those guys to round in the form. They don't need to go get more.
Well, if you go get more, though, what you're going to get, you're getting Kamale Correa,
right,
who's
exactly,
available.
Exactly.
Right. So you're not finding an answer. You're finding a piece.
Yeah, nobody's selling.
Their answers are in their locker room. for pass rush. They have the talent there. We've seen that talent. They're getting paid because of that talent.
I don't know if we've seen Vic Beasley. I mean, we've seen Vic Beasley talent one time in Atlanta, 3 years ago?
But Vic Beasley had a sack less than Harold Landry had here last year in Atlanta. I mean, we saw him have eight and a half sacks last year.
But we know where his standing is right now based on a snap count yesterday.
Yeah, 11 snaps yesterday. I agree with you, but I'm saying, like, he's got to be the answer.
Right. They got to crank him up.
John,
I don't know how.
Feinstein, time to talk some national headlines. Do we dare mention Chad's Braves up 3-1? Of course we do. I'm just looking at Chad as he's enjoying a nice lunch.
Because my teams lose, I'm not a loser. We'll talk about it. Absolutely.
We've got to get into this as Atlanta gives up the 3-1 series lead. The Dodgers headed to the World Series. Congratulations, Jim Wyatt, as they take on the Tampa Bay Rays. It's coming up. John Feinstein next. National headlines, midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
Andy Dalton leads the Cowboys in their first game without Dak Prescott as they host the Cardinals on Monday Night Football. Kickoff is tonight at 7:15 on your home for Sunday, Monday, and Thursday Night Football. 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue and Poncho and Lefty's Cantina. They always deliver, Chad.
Holy cow, this is some good food at Poncho and Lefty's. Got a listener here with us right now. We urge more of you to come have lunch with us. I got the pork belly quesadilla, and that was a sound decision by me. Very sound.
And it's gone.
It's gone. We have learned in this business how to eat quickly during a commercial break.
It's not
there is
good.
No time
it's
wasted.
Not good for the digestion. I got half of the burrito bowl in. It's outstanding, but the thing I do is the habit we've formed here for eating in a sprint is how I eat all my meals. Now
you're like
a shovel.
My dad was like that for a while. He said when he got out of the military, we have so much time to eat. So every time he ate a meal, it was always no talking, just eat as fast as possible.
John Feinstein joins us. Award-winning columnist, best-selling author. He joins us each Monday as we hit the national headlines. John, hope you're doing well today.
Well, I'm starving.
You're welcome.
Crying out loud. And, you know, Chad, it's funny because my dad was in the Army in World War II, and he used to, most nights, he would finish eating before my mom sat down.
It's amazing to watch. And my dad still has a little bit of that as well. And by the way, thanks to your father for being a part of the greatest generation. Hearing that, I did not know that, John. What I do know, though, is that the Atlanta Braves seem to find a way, even when they're having a great postseason, to have a very Atlanta Braves postseason moment. Just so happened last night, it was a huge base-running blunder by two different players that led to a double play when the Braves had a chance to really make something happen and extend the lead against the Dodgers, and they came up empty because of that.
Yeah, they really did. That was obviously the critical moment in the game, because if you extend the lead, if you make it a 3-run lead, 4-run lead, who knows what would have happened in the inning if not for the double blunder on that one play. They might very probably even would have won the game. You don't know for sure. You don't know how many runs they might or might not have scored in that inning, but they took away the opportunity, put it that way, by running the bases so poorly. And it really is sad, because the Braves had an amazing season. To lose Mike Soroka, their best pitcher, to have the injuries they had, to then go on and win the East and pitch as well as they did in both the wild card round and the division series, and then build a 3-1 lead against the Dodgers, who were the best team in baseball in the regular season, so close to going back to the World Series, which they haven't been in since, 1999, I think. It really is a shame. And I say that as someone who had no skin in the game between the Dodgers and the Braves. I respect both organizations. I know Stan Kasten well, not only from his days with the Braves, but here in Washington with the Nationals. So, but you hate to see a good team have its season end on such a down note.
So you got the Yankees with the highest payroll in baseball, the Dodgers second, Red Sox third, You've got the Braves 14th, and then you have the Tampa Bay Rays with the 24th biggest payroll in the league. This is where baseball has become a little bit more fun, John, is that you've got these stories every year of a team that just drafts well, that has a system, they don't have a ton of stars, and yet here they are, the Tampa Bay Rays in the World Series as American League champions.
Yeah, and you've got to give the entire organization credit for the moves they're able to make with that limited payroll. And they took a gamble signing a 36-year-old pitcher, Charlie Morton, to, for them, a very big contract, $15 million this offseason. And clearly it paid off, especially in Game 7 against Morton's former team, the Astros. And I'll say this. When they hired Kevin Cash as their manager, I was very skeptical. And what had Kevin Cash done to become a major league manager as opposed to some other guys? I'm a big Charlie Montoyo guy. He had been the bench coach in Tampa Bay. Why not give him the shot? And of course now he's doing very well in Toronto. But Kevin Cash has done an amazing job managing the talent that he has. And I think it's going to be a great World Series. I think anybody who thinks the Dodgers are going to roll in 4 or 5 is mistaken, which means I probably just jinxed the poor Rays.
So, John, leave it to Nick Saban. Not only is he maybe already the greatest college football coach of all time, certainly headed in that direction, but the man cured COVID-19 also. He has solved the problem of it in 3 days after testing positive for COVID-19. He clears all protocols. He's on the sideline.
Trump is going to hire him to replace Dr. Fauci. You know what was interesting? I'm sure you guys saw that Zoom interview he did. I guess it was on Wednesday, right after he was diagnosed with COVID. And I thought his attitude was great. His approach was the right one. I'm going to stay home until they tell me it's okay. And he said he was asymptomatic, and it looked like he was asymptomatic. And sure enough, 3 days later, he's on the sideline for one of the biggest games of the season. And Alabama, as it almost always does, not always, but almost always does in big games, comes through and beats Georgia. So, yes, all power to him. He's not only, as you said, he's won 6 national championships. He's got a statue in front of Bryant-Denny Stadium. They'll probably change the name to Bryant-Denny Saban Stadium at some point, and he's cured COVID-19. That's a pretty good resume.
When I saw the day's hockey news, I honestly thought that there could not be a worse development for the National Hockey League than the retirement of Mike Emmerich. This guy is the best play-by-play broadcaster in any sport, as far as I'm concerned. And the energy he brings to a game draws me into games that I'm not that interested in. And I think they lose me flipping by a game as a guy who might watch.
You know, I thought much the same thing when I saw the news this morning, Paul. And you just hit on it, though. If you listen to Mike Emmerich do a December game between two mid-level teams, you would think it was the 7th game in the Stanley Cup Finals. Not because he screams, not because he has some shtick, but because he brings absolute enthusiasm and great preparation to every game he's ever done. I've done some TV and radio, and one of the things that I've learned from some of the better play-by-play guys that I've worked with is you approach every game as if it's the biggest game you've ever done in your life, because for the teams involved, the players and coaches involved, it's a big game. Every game is a big game. And Mike Emmerich took that approach throughout his entire career. I remember him when he was doing the Devils games before he went national, and thought he was fantastic then. Wished the Islanders would have stolen him from the Devils. But it is a sad day for hockey to not have Mike Emmerich doing those games, because, you know, there are certain broadcasters, and it's a handful, that when you hear them doing a game, like you said, Paul, it's a game you want to watch, and you feel like it's a big game, whether it's a big game or not. And Mike Emmerich absolutely filled all of that.
John Feinstein, our guest here on the Midday 180.
John, last night on Football Night in America, Mike Tirico paid tribute to Sid Hartman, who passed away at 100 years old yesterday in Minneapolis. You know that you've had a big-time impact on your industry and a market when a national broadcast is saying something and paying tribute the way they did Sid Hartman, certainly a big-time figure in sports writing.
No, there's no question about it, Chad. And how many guys live to see a press box named after them? The press box in the Viking Stadium is the Sid Hartman press box, and has been since the building opened. And I when I was out there a couple of years ago working on my quarterback book, there was Sid, having done his pregame show. He was a youth then. He was only like 96, sitting there holding court, as he always did. I went way back to my very early days in journalism, knowing Sid as an elder even then. And I've told the story before, but Sid played a role in my coming up with the title for A Season on the Brink, because he was very good friends with Bob Knight. He was one of those handful of reporters that Bob liked and respected. And when Indiana played at Minnesota the season I was doing the book, they arrived in town late Thursday night having lost at Iowa badly. And Sid walked into breakfast when the team was having breakfast, and Knight was in one of those moods where he wasn't talking to anybody. And he didn't even look up at Sid. And Sid understood. Sid had dealt with Knight before. And as we walked out of breakfast, Sid turned to me, figuring it was safe to talk to me, and said, "So what are you going to do all day in the snow here in Minneapolis?" And I said, "Well, I guess I'll just do what I do every day. I'll follow Knight around." I was putting myself down, saying I had no life. Well, Knight was walking about two steps ahead of us, and he turned around and started screaming at me in what proved to be a harbinger of the incident that ended his coaching career at Indiana. "Don't you call me Knight. You don't call me Knight. You can call me Coach, you can call me Bob, but you're 28 years old. You don't call me Knight." I wasn't calling him Knight. I was talking to someone else about him. And I knew enough to know you don't start an argument with Bob in front of his coaches, because he had to win the argument. So I just said, "I'll see you at practice." Walked out the door, started walking around in the snow. And I was pissed, to be honest. And I said, you know, to myself, every day we're on the brink of another disaster. Doesn't matter, win, lose. Always on the brink of something. And then I thought, wow, that might be a pretty good title. So Sid Hartman played a major role in my life in that sense, and also because he was always so nice to me. And I'm sure you guys also know that his son Chad is a talk show host in Minneapolis, and is as good as it gets, and a class act too.
I knew you'd have a great story, John, when I asked about that. you certainly
did. It was great.
You also have something that's new for you, an audio only book that's out today. What can you tell us about it?
Came out today, Chad. Thanks for bringing it up. It's something I've never done before. It's unique in that sense. It's five interviews with people I've known for a long time and been close to. Steve Kerr, Mary Carrillo, David Faraday, Mike Krzyzewski, Tom Izzo. Five, I think, pretty significant figures in sports for different reasons, but five people I've known well. And so the audio book is called The Friends I've Made. And it's about 5 hours long, about an hour for each person, 30 to 40 minute interview with each of the five, preceded by me talking about them, how I got to know them, how our relationships developed, and then kind of an epilogue after each interview with me talking about what we discussed during the course of the interview. And it was great fun to do, because During the pandemic, it gave me a chance to spend some time with and reconnect with people I have been close to through the years. And I got to say, all five of them were great. They're very intimate conversations, because they're with people, as I said, that I've known for a long time and liked. And as a reporter, if you don't admit to the fact that you like certain people more than others, you're being dishonest with yourself. There's no such thing as objective reporting. We all have biases. You just have to understand that you have biases and be fair no matter what. And these are five people I'm very much biased towards and who have all obviously been very good at what they do. So it was a great project. Like I said, it's called The Friends I've Made, and you can get it on Amazon and other places as of today.
Outstanding. John Feinstein has been our guest. Yes. Thank you, John. And we will catch up next week.
look forward to it. I can't wait to see what the Titans come up with next week.
5-0 next Sunday. We'll see. Thank you.
5-0 and boy, you know, win or lose, you guys are having a fascinating season, and Ryan Tannehill's an amazing story.
Now, the Tennessee Vols are another story, though. You know, that's
very much so.
Yes. Back and forth.
They'd won 8 in a row, and now they've lost 2 in a row, and that loss to Kentucky on Saturday was embarrassing.
Chad, you said the 1800s was the last time that Kentucky won by that margin?
It was the worst, it was the biggest win, margin of victory for Kentucky since 1893, which was the first game of the series between the two.
For the record, Chad and Jonathan, I was not around for that game.
You weren't around for the Grover-Cleveland administration, is what I'm hearing?
No, I miss Grover-Cleveland, and McKinley was my first president.
We look forward to that book, that audio book. John, thank you. Appreciate
you. Next week, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, coming up, the VolQuest report with Austin Price, where we're assuming that Pruitt and Chaney met yesterday for team meeting, coaches meetings. We will ask Austin Price what the points of emphasis need to be with Pruitt and Chaney behind closed doors.
It's a day where I need more time with Austin Price. I have so many questions to get to.
That's next. Midday 180. We are delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
Also, Taylor Lewan's news is in.
104.5 The Zone.
Brent Daugherty is just like you. I mean, he loves SEC football, live music, bourbon, and all things Middle Tennessee. And you get him for your drive home on the 3HL with Don Davenport. This afternoon from 3 to 6 on 104.5 The Zone.
Austin Price is about to join us with the VolQuest report today. First, though, PK with reaction to the tweet from Taylor Lewan, who tweets out, I wanted to let everyone know I got an MRI today. I tore my ACL yesterday against Houston. Don't feel sorry for me. I'm going to handle this rehab like a pro and come back better than ever. Thank you, Titans fans, for your support. Hashtag no bad days.
Well, I feel sorry for him, certainly. I feel sorry for the Titans because I think he's the third or, at worst, the fourth most valuable guy. In terms of who you wouldn't want to lose, Tannehill, Henry, and then Lewan and or Simmons. I think Lewan's third there. So Ty Sambrello, I would expect to be there this week. Maybe you work your way towards Isaiah Wilson being ready at right tackle. I think he's still a ways away. And then you can maybe move Dennis Kelly from right to left. But I think some people, at least on Twitter, are romanticizing what Dennis Kelly did at left tackle last year. Part of it was Mariota, certainly. But, you know, Adam Humphries was in there chipping a ton to help Dennis Kelly. Anybody at left tackle is going to need help. We saw what happened when Sambrello didn't have help and J.J. Watt got around him and pounded Ryan Tannehill strip sack that was a turning point in an up-and-down game for the Titans. Also, Adam Schefter tweets that Jonnu Smith has a quote-unquote minor ankle sprain.
That's great news.
Very good.
It's not because minor indicates it's not a high ankle sprain that's going to keep him out multiple weeks. And
gives you cause for hope.
It's something that, you know, we'll monitor this week because while practice time could be limited, he could be a game-time decision with a quote-unquote minor ankle sprain. Again,
he'll get heavy treatment this week. And they'll be hopeful.
Coming up, more of your phone calls. Eddie George will join us as well. But we say hello to Austin Price of VolQuest.com. Time for the VolQuest Report, presented by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage experts. Visit MTGRT.com today. Austin, hope you're doing well.
Well, it's a thrill a minute, guys. How are you?
Well, Austin, so you broke the story on Jimmy Brumbaugh being fired by Jeremy Pruitt. What happened to necessitate a guy being fired 4 games into his tenure at a school?
Well, Coach Pruitt cited philosophical differences being the reason that he made the move on Jimmy Brumbaugh. I just don't think he meshed. I think that, you know, Coach Pruitt hired him, you know, not at the direction of Derek Ansley, but I think DA kind of spoke highly of Brumbaugh. You know, anybody can kind of perform well in an interview.
And you know, but once I think, you know, Coach Pruitt got to kind of see him recruit. Coach Pruitt got to see him, you know, interact with his players and coach his players. I think that there was a real difference in how you handle things. And I think that it kind of just deteriorated from game one to game four. And, of course, you know, as my Twitter feed shows, Tennessee fans don't understand why this is not the offensive line coach or the quarterback coach or the offensive coordinator, and it's the defensive line coach. But, you know, Jeremy Pruitt felt like there needed to be a move made, so he will now coach the defensive line for the rest of the season.
So Jeremy Pruitt's going to be head coach and defensive line coach. What kind of staff flexibility does Tennessee have? And I ask that for an example. Chip Long is an offensive analyst. He was the offensive coordinator at Notre Dame the last 3 years. Notre Dame was 33-6 during that time. Is there a chance that a Chip Long is moved to a full-time role with the team and you add an extra coach on offense to help out because Pruitt's now covering the defensive line?
You know, I could see that being a possibility, you know, more so if, you know, you really needed help recruiting, but you don't really need help recruiting. You know, I don't think that'll be the case, you know, because the only way they do that is if they do it and say, okay, hey, Chip, whatever you're making that. Like, you're not going to get, you know, you're not getting kind of bump in pay. I mean, Tennessee's paying, you know, $1.2 million for Jimmy Brumbaugh to work 8 months during a pandemic when they had, the staff had months off at home. I mean, like, it's a bit of a head scratcher, really, when you think about, like, you know, his tenure here. But, you know, it is a move they decided to make. But as of right now, I don't see Chip Long being on the, you know, the main staff at this point.
Austin, for those who haven't read or heard Pruitt's press conference comments from today about the quarterback situation, recap for us, if you will, what he said, and does it indicate that we're going to see a rotation at that position this coming week?
Well, it's pretty clear that Jarrett will be the guy that trots out there on Saturday. You know, he said he's going to earn in practice this week, but he did not want to put number two on the shelf. I made this comparison. Did you guys ever watch Two and a Half Men with Charlie Sheen?
Sure. Yep.
Yes or no? Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I equate him to Alan Harper, Charlie's brother, who moves in and never moves out. Even once Charlie Sheen gets moved off the show and they move Ashton Kutcher in, Alan Harper remains in the house. JG is that with the quarterback position. He's moved in. They can't get him moved out. You know, the staff clearly feels like that he's their best chance to win football games. I talked to, you know, several guys over there last night, and they all, to a man, said, you know, if we're going to have a chance to right the ship and win football games, he's got to be the quarterback. The other guys just can't do it. And that, to me, that's an indictment on one, quarterback evaluation, quarterback development, you know, and an indictment on all those players. You know, if Jarrett, who routinely has made mistakes, and some of which have not been his fault, but a lot of them have, for him to continue to get opportunity after opportunity after opportunity after all those mistakes, it's mind-boggling and something the fans are just not going to, you know, they're not going to be okay with. I mean, like, when he rolls out there if number two trots out there Saturday against Alabama, the boos inside Neyland Stadium will be reverberated all the way to, you know, maybe Nashville.
Here's what I don't understand, Austin, with all this. You said maybe it's just bad evaluations. Well, how can a staff that has been so bad at evaluating quarterbacks, they couldn't over-recruit Jarrett Garantano in 3 years, how is that staff making the determination that Harrison Bailey can't be good after 10 snaps? That's what we heard from Jeremy Pruitt. He had 10 snaps in fall camp getting ready for this season and then a scrimmage, but yet now I'm to believe that Harrison Bailey as a freshman, they've written him off, and he can't be better than Jarrett Garantano in year one, even if he started taking all the snaps?
Impossible.
In practice? How can you help me cut through the double talk there with that?
Oh, Chad, I don't know how to help you cut through it because, you know, the more people I talk to over there, they speak in unison. It's almost like, you know, when, you know, Butch Jones said when he was here, he had those talking points every day, every week. And, you know, when you would come in there and you would talk to kids, like the kids would already be coached up by the SID department about, you know, the key phrases that Butch wanted, you know, reverberated. It's not the same as that because it's not like the same phrases, but the same message is pretty clear. They just, you know, I think part of it, too, they don't feel he's ready. And I think this week specifically, they feel like that may be unfair to the kid. Like that going against Alabama could potentially set him back or hurt him going forward. I don't disagree with that, but, I mean, you know, how do you not at least give Brian Maurer a shot, JT Shrout, even if you feel like those guys make a ton of mistakes in practice, okay? How do you not? What's the difference between making mistakes in practice, making mistakes in the games? JG makes none in practice, but he makes them in the game. So, I you know, it just feels like, you know, something that you sit back and you do the same thing over and over again, and it's something the fans are just not going to understand. And I know you can't make every decision based off the fans. But at the same time, you know, they help you in a lot of regards. So you need them to stick behind you. And so, you know, this whole quarterback quandary that Tennessee has, it's a head-scratcher and has been a head-scratcher for some time.
Austin, it's clear that Pruitt and Chaney are not on the same page based on post-game comments and with what we're seeing in these games. What do you think the points of emphasis are whenever they meet, or if they met yesterday, I'm assuming they did, and overall for this team, what are the points of emphasis now sitting at 2-2?
I think more than anything, guys, is Jeremy wants Jim to just be a little more creative. You know, I know why that Chaney was not as creative at Georgia, and that's solely because Tennessee wasn't sure what offensive lineman they were going to have, and they were afraid that the musical chairs of Cade at center or right, left tackle or wherever could hurt them in the game. And so they wanted to keep it somewhat simple. Well, simple equated to, you know, not very good. This past week, you know, they kept trying to push the ball down the field. Kentucky was dropping everybody and saying, okay, you can have the dink and dunk stuff. Well, Jim Chaney just simply wasn't patient. Jim Chaney, you know, they were running the ball on Kentucky really solid, you know, got impatient, you know, threw it, that first pick was, you know, I agree with Coach Bruno. That's a very little reward for a lot of risk type of throw. You know, so Tennessee's got to be better in that instance. You know, and Jim Chaney's got to be better in that instance. But I mean, you know, Tennessee's gotten mutilated on defense with crossing patterns. Where's that in Tennessee's offense? You know, we don't see that very often with Tennessee's offense where they're, you know, running a lot of slants and those type of things. So, you know, I think more than anything, it's just kind of getting on the same page. I know Coach Pruitt and Coach Chaney met last night and, you know, from all indications, I think that they have the same common goal and they're on the same page going forward.
Where is Jimmy Holiday? You know, where are these young receivers that were supposed to add the speed element to this offense? You mentioned a lack of creativity. Is Tennessee ever going to snap it to someone that's not the full-time quarterback and try to run something off of that?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know why, you know, if the offense is so complex that you can't get Holiday, Callaway, Weidman on the field, then you need to dummy it down. They dummied it down for Rick Rogers and Justin Hunter. Why can you not dummy it down and get those kids on the field? Because right now Tennessee's got no playmakers on offense. I mean, Josh Palmer is a good player, but teams are taking him away. You know, they know, okay, we're going in, we're going to take number five away, and then we're just going to say number seven, number four, number 80 are not going to be able to get open enough for them to make, you know, a lot of plays down the field. So, you know, I don't disagree that, you know, trying some different things, trying some different wrinkles, and getting some of these young kids. Look at the running back position. I mean, Eric Gray and Ty Chandler are doing a nice job, but Tennessee's got nobody like Kentucky had in the second half when they just kind of leaned on them with that 230-pound back. You know, Tennessee's got nobody like that. So, you know, they got to recruit. But then, you know, why not give D. Beckwith a shot? You know, I know he's probably not ready, but at the same time, he continues to make some plays in practice. And, you know, the offense needs some kind of, like, juice. You know, and right now it's very stale. And so we'll see if they kind of come with anything different on Saturday.
Austin Price with the VolQuest Report presented by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage experts. Visit MTGRT.com today. Austin, thank you as always, and we will catch up with you on Friday for the VolQuest Power Hour. You and Brent will be back to preview Tennessee-Alabama.
Yes, we will. And before I get out the door, I do want to say congratulations to big Kentucky fan Billy Wilford, who listens to your all show routinely every day. And he's been texting me for a week about Tennessee and Kentucky. He said Kentucky by 90 on Saturday. I said it felt like 190 after the game.
Billy.
There you go.
William.
Austin, we look forward to you next Monday having to give a shout-out to Alabama fans.
I won't do that, but Billy, he's a different guy. He's a good dude.
All right. Hey, thank you, man.
See you guys.
AP, Austin Price has been our guest. Coming up, Eddie George. 27, Eddie George next as we kick off the final hour of the Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
Get every Titans touchdown, interception, and hard hit right here on your home for Titans football. 104.5 The Zone.